I am 16 years old. The year is 2004, and it is February 24th. I am about to conduct an interview with Horace Van Cleve over the Korean War. What is your name?
My name is Horace Van Cleve.
And how old are you now?
I am 72 years old.
How old were you when you went to Korea?
I was 21.
Did you join the military voluntarily, or were you drafted?
Well, I was commissioned through ROTC in college, so I was not drafted. I voluntarily signed a contract to take a commission.
Why did you decide to do that?
So I wouldn't be drafted.
What were the advantages of joining voluntarily?
Well, you got to be an officer, and higher pay, and a choice of what you're going to do, and so that was much more desirable than getting drafted.
Were you married at the time?
No.
Nope. Were you seeing anyone at the time?
Not really. Broken up with a girl about a year or two before I went into the Army.
When did you know that you were going to Korea?
By the time I got through basic officer's course at Fort Sill, that you were going to get either assignment to Germany, which you immediately got after you got out of basic officer's school, if you were sent to a post in the United States, you're going to be there for 6 months, for 6 months troop duty, and then you knew you were going to Korea at the end of 6 months. You couldn't go into the combat zone without having 6 months troop duty.
Did you make any special preparations before leaving?
No, we did not have wills or power of attorney or anything like that before we shipped over. We just signed our insurance policy, designated who the beneficiary is going to be, and shipped out.
Did you take anything with you besides what the Army gave you?
Well, I started to take a pistol, a personal pistol, and I had permission to do that. But when I got to Japan, we were told that we couldn't take a personal weapon in, that it would be searched, and it was a violation of the ceasefire agreement. And so we were supposed to leave the weapon there in Japan, and I figured it would get stolen, so I took it on the ship and dropped it overboard the middle of the night before we got to Korea.
So how did you get over to Korea?
We went by ship. But our orders were to report to Camp Stolen, California, and await the first available transportation to the Far East. And if it was going to be an airplane, we got on an airplane. If it was a ship, we got on a ship. And we got a slow ship.
What set sort of quarters did you have on the ship?
We had a stateroom that had 12 officers in one room with all of our baggage piled in the middle of the floor.
And how big would you say that room was?
I guess 10 by 12.
See, what was the state of the conflict when you arrived?
They had just... we were on the first boat that came in after the war was over with, so they had ceased fire, and they were reorganizing positions and that kind of thing.
I see. Well, since the official war was over, did men still get hurt and killed?
Somebody was getting shot, killed, or stepped on landmines virtually every night along the front.
What were
so
the...
It was not uncommon.
What were the usual types of injuries that occurred, accidents?
Some of them were just dumb accidents. Some somebody who was not careful with a weapon or something like that. Other people ran into booby traps that had been left behind. There were a lot of landmines that had been left scattered all over Korea, and the minefields weren't marked. People had wandered into minefields. You learn not to go down a new trail or get off of the trail if you're walking through an area. They had a new, when we were going through Fort Sill, we had a lot of people in our class that had been given battlefield commissions, and so they had enough stories to tell us about what to expect over there. And I knew a couple of guys that walked into booby traps, and the reason they survived was they had been there long enough. The wires had rusted and didn't pull the pins on the booby traps, and so while the mine didn't go off when they stepped on it. So we knew about what to expect.
Were the accidents similar at all to what happens over in the Gulf region now with car wrecks or just weapons mistakes as well?
Well, right now they're getting, they're setting roadside bombs and stuff, but we didn't run into that kind of thing. Ours were more just accidents or getting into situations. Every time we dug a hole, we generally dig up some explosives because they had been up and down the peninsula so many times and buried explosives to keep it from being captured. And so we start to dig a hole for a bunker and get a bunch of explosives, and we'd call in the demolition team, and they'd clear the explosives out, and we'd go back to digging again.
I see. How was the weather like when you were over there?
Well, when we first got there, we got there in the first part of August, and it was raining then. And when I first night we came into Incheon, and then the next morning we got on a train, and they said, when the train stops, get off, but you're at the end of the line. So we rode the train all day long up to a little railhead called Chuncheon, and our division trucks were supposed to meet us there, and we stood out in the rain for about an hour and a half until the trucks showed up, and then we went off in the middle of the night and into what's called a Rimbo Depot, and then we were there, got our assignments to our individual battalions, and then moved on up to there about 2 days later. And so when I first got there, we were in what was called the Kumwa Valley, right at the end of the war. Several outfits got overrun right there in front of where our positions were. And a friend of mine in Camp Polk had been waiting to go up to one of those outfits the next morning and got overrun. So we could look down and see their positions that they had before the war. It was in the DMZ by that time. And we were there for 2 weeks. And if you go back and read the history of the ceasefire, Korean President Syngman Rhee was not happy with the ceasefire. He wanted to unify all of Korea, and so he was always threatening to start the war again. So they pulled out all the American forces on the eastern part of Korea and moved them into a solid mass across the western third of the DMZ.
So you wouldn't be responsible for Seoul, or?
So we were responsible for north of Seoul. That's where it was. But what we would also be, we'd have our backs up against Incheon, which is a seaport, so that we could be evacuated. But when we moved over what was then called the Chorwon Valley, I was assigned to an infantry company as a forward observer for artillery, and the company that I was with held a mile and a half of front line. So they had 200 men scattered over a mile and a half of trenches across the front line in the only tank country in Korea. and everybody else is up in the mountains on either side of the valley. And my Fort Observer bunker was right in the middle of that valley. And the first sergeant with the infantry company said, it's going to get cold here one of these days, and then things are going to get interesting. And I said, what's going to happen? And he said, well, that'd be 90 days, and Sigmund Rhee's going to start the war again, and by that time the ground will be frozen, and the tanks can come through. And he said, about 10 of the guys in this company are going to get out of here alive. The rest of us are going to get overrun. I said, which 10 guys get out of here alive? And he said, the first 10 guys that get hit. The medics will get them out, and the rest of us are going to have to stay here. And so this was the historic invasion route down to Seoul from the north. So historically, over the centuries, they'd always come down this valley. Because it's flat, and everything else is in the mountains on either side of it. So I was up there with them for about 3 months, I guess. And they went back to my artillery battery, and which is 3 miles behind the DMZ, and was back there the rest of the time. The guy that told me that we'd get 10 guys out of there alive, about a month after I went back to the battery, he stepped on a landmine and blew his leg off.
With your artillery, did you have Chinese or North Korean positions picked out that you would begin shelling in case the war began, or were you just kind of waiting?
No, we knew, we could. It's amazing. You can see a radio antenna miles away. They always told us to stay off of the ridge line because people could see you a long ways off. And when you got to Korea, you could tell it. What you do is sit there and look over there position and say, if I was over there, where would I put up my Fort Observer bunker? And you pick out a spot and then put the binoculars on there, and you look real close, you'd see a radio antenna coming out of there. And I had a tank right behind my bunker, and their 90 millimeter guns will shoot like a rifle. And so we had the positions picked out of their Fort Observers, and had told the tank gunner, if anything starts, this is the first places you shoot, and then we'll worry about the one getting in close. And so, yeah, we knew where they were likely to be. And but every morning we'd get up and look out at the world when the sun came up, and the Chorwon Valley had about 25 foot of pea soup fog coming off the rice paddy. And I always kept wondering, one of these days this fog's going to burn off and there's going to be a jillion Chinese sitting down there under it. But never did.
So what were the conditions that you lived in? Did you have tents? Did you just live in the bunker? What could
I lived in the bunker, and it was warmer in the bunker than in a tent. When we went back to the battery, we lived in tents. But up with the infantry, I lived in a bunker. And other than being a little dirty, it was okay. It's a lot warmer. And we had 9 foot of sandbags and rock piled on top of our heads. And the rafters on the bunkers were made out of railroad rails. They've blown up the railroad tracks through there. And the Koreans had built this bunker and used railroad rails for ceiling rafters.
I see. What was your relationship with the South Koreans?
We didn't see much of them. We had plenty of them when I was back in the battery that were assigned to our battery, that they were Korean, they're called Katusas. They were Korea Army trainee, and they were there to learn, you know, how to be artillerymen. And but that was the only relation, you know, only contact we had with Koreans. We had a houseboy, and he took care of washing our clothes and seeing that our dishes were washed this kind of thing, but other than that, we had very little contact with Korea as such.
What sort of things did you decide that you needed once you were over in Korea that the Army didn't provide?
Well, they didn't provide razor blades or shaving cream or toothpaste or anything like that that you had to get your own.
So where would you get that from?
We had a little PX system that came out of Seoul, and they would get what was called a drop every week or two, and so you'd buy shaving cream through that or something like that, but saved your razor blades. That's why I got that razor that I gave you that didn't have to use razor blades. It would, you could sharpen it, and it worked like a safety razor, but it didn't have to worry about getting razor blades.
So mainly everything you needed you either got from the Army or you could buy from this group that came out.
Well, the group was Army. I mean, it was an Army PX thing, but you couldn't get very much there. No, the Army furnished everything.
I see. How much leave time did you get while you were over there?
None.
So you were on...
We got to go on R&R after you've been there so many months. You got to go to Japan for, I think it was about a week, and it was called R&R, Rest and Rehabilitation, and then they flew you back over Japan, then flew you back to Korea.
So what did you do once you got to Japan?
I went sightseeing, basically, and bought souvenirs, sent home.
What kind of souvenirs did you buy?
Bought a set of china that your mother has now, and I gave my mother, and my mother passed it on to your mother, and then just little trinkets, odds and ends, vases, and bookends, and that kind of thing. We have a little card there here, and that I spent my last Japanese money on, but just before I shipped back to Korea. But it just kind of like it's a big tourist trap.
So, how much money did you get for being an officer in the Army?
Got $222 a month.
I see, and was that sufficient for when you were over there?
More than enough. Well, they didn't have any place to spend any money. So there was no problem. But, most of it went back home, went into the bank.
What was the most exciting thing that happened when you were over there?
I don't know. One time we were down to two officers in the battery, and the battery commander had gone back to Japan and R&R. We were always under one condition or another. There were three conditions that called Easy, Fox, and George. And Easy meant that we kept two-thirds of our guns in position at all times and had to have two-thirds of the enlisted men on the guns. And if anything happened, we would follow it on the radio, but we wouldn't do anything if we got a fire mission or anything like that. Fox was that we actually followed the fire mission and put the adjustments into the guns and got everything ready, but we would not shoot. And then condition George meant the war was started up again, and anything that came down, we didn't ask any questions, we shot it. And so one day we got this thing that said condition practice George, which meant literally practice war. And so that was confusing, and we broke out all the ammunition and got ready, and then we started asking questions, and nobody knew any of the answers. Went over to battalion headquarters to see what they knew, and they didn't know anything, and they couldn't find out anything. And so we sit around in foxholes and followed the thing and didn't get any fire mission, so we didn't shoot anything. And late that afternoon, early evening, they called it all off, so we never did find out what happened. But that and going out on alert at night, we got called out quite often at night and go out and sit up in an alternate position. And one night I was sure the war must have started because we were going south into an alternate position and we were meeting a solid stream of trucks. Everything was black out, but you could see that these trucks were all loaded with infantry and they had one solid lineup going north. And so we got back and got set up, but after about a couple hours in a frozen creek bed, they said, okay, go back to your battery position. But that's about as exciting as it got. Most of it was boredom.
So what was the most boring things you had to do?
Just the routine. Do the same thing every day. Nothing changed.
How long was your tour of duty over in Korea?
Well, I spent 9 months over there, but I got an early release. Since the war was over with, they decided they had too many junior officers, and the Army was cutting back on the number of company grade or battery grade officers, lieutenants and captains. And, so if you had, if you had 6 months in Korea and 18 months in the service, they would you could request early release, and my battalion commander would never approve a early release. He said he couldn't get replacements, which he couldn't. And so when it got to be 21 months, they didn't give them any choice. The Army said they're going to release us in 21 months rather than we were supposed to be in for 24 months. So we got out 3 months early. But my battalion commander wanted me to extend for an extra month, and I told him no, I didn't think I wanted to. Told him he could step on landmine over there if he weren't careful.
So how did you feel about the war? In general, just the political reasons for going?
Well, we just, you know, it was there, and that's what I used to do. When they got a war, I used to go to war. And so we knew we were going from the time we were juniors in college that they started the war up the summer between my sophomore and junior year. That fall, we signed our commissioning contracts. And so from that time on, we knew as long as there's a war on, we were going to be going. So that wasn't any big surprise to us. We went to summer camp, and we've been trained since we were sophomores to be artillerymen. So we had gone through all the stuff, and summer camp between our junior and senior year, we were up for 6 weeks at Fort Sill and of course shot live ammunition up there. Then we went back after we reported for active duty. We had to go through 4 months of battery officers class, and it was all a repeat of what we'd had for 3 years at A&M, except we were shooting live ammunition. So it was not a big deal. I mean, the West Pointers had never been trained that way, and they were staying in the study hall at night and trying to catch up and what have you, because it's all new to them. But we were pretty relaxed about the whole thing. It was just a repeat of everything we'd already had.
So you and your fellow officers didn't really think too much about what was going on in the war. What was the public opinion about the war? Were they?
They could care less. They thought if you were dumb enough to be in, that you probably ought to have to go over there. Nobody seemed to worry about it. Unless you had somebody in the family. And there was no big protest against the war, and there was no big support for the war. They said that it was the first war that there was no patriotic songs for. There was no homecoming. When we came home, we got off the ship, got on a plane, flew to Fort Bliss, got leave to come home and call my folks, and they met me at the airport at Back Island, which is 10, 12 miles from my home, and that was it.
And what did you decide to do after the war?
Well, it's what I went to college for, being a vocational ag teacher. And by the time I got out of the service, there was an opening in my hometown for a vocational ag teacher. And so by the time I got home, the high school principal wanted me to come down and do an interview for the job. And I had the interview and got the job.
I see. Is there anything you would like to add about your experiences in Korea?
It was an experience of a lifetime that you wouldn't want to repeat. It's cold over there. I grew up in South Texas. I had never seen real cold weather. And when the first sergeant up with the infantry company started talking about the ground freezing, I had no idea what he was talking about. Other than I knew it got cold, but found out that the ground froze solid down for 18 inches to 2 feet, and just like concrete. Could not dig in it, could not chop it. You had to take an axe to dig a little bitty hole. And we required the enlisted men to take a shower once a week during the, whether they needed it or not. And if I'd had a choice, I wouldn't have taken a shower all winter long, because you didn't want to take any of your clothes off. But since we made the enlisted men take showers, I guess we ought to too. So we'd go back and take a shower once a week also, whether we needed it or not.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.